funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How are American marriages different from those in other countries? For a society that values wedded bliss as much as ours does, we seem to have a devil of a time actually staying together. Despite our enthusiasm for religious traditions that frown upon divorce, the United States has the highest rate of it in the Western world, and more than 8% of American children will grow up sharing a home with three or more of their mother's romantic partners. So what makes us so likely to partner up and then break up? Andrew J. Cherlin is professor of sociology and public policy at Johns Hopkins University. He explores these questions in his new book, The Marriage Go-Round, The State of Marriage and the Family in America Today. Andy, welcome to Think.
Thanks.
It would seem that one reason we get divorced so often is that we get married so often. What are typically American expectations for marriage?
What we expect these days is personal satisfaction. You know, we ask ourselves, am I getting enough from this marriage? Am I growing as a person? And if we decide that we're not, we're more likely to end a marriage than to people in other countries. Call it American individualism. You know, we think very personally about our own well-being in our relationships. And if they're not going as well, we tend to end them.
Yeah, and I guess by definition, that desire for autonomy and individual satisfaction is going to have to be in conflict with the desire for a long-lasting partnership.
Right. And we also seem to have more of a desire for marriage than to people in other countries. We don't just divorce more than people in other countries. We marry more. We also have lots of living-together relationships, and we break those up quickly. What we have is more turnover, more churning, more partners in our lives, live-in partners, I mean, than do people in most other wealthy countries.
How did the United States develop into this pro-marriage culture?
I think it goes way back in our history to the colonial days. Marriage was the center of society in the colonial era. In a way, it wasn't in many other countries. And also, we have had divorce since the beginning of this country. We didn't have much, but we had it. Whereas Europe back in the olden days didn't have divorce because the Catholic Church didn't allow divorce, and because the Church of England didn't allow divorce. So we've had a history here of allowing both divorce and making marriage important, and I think those two facts grounded our culture and makes us what we are today.
Is it your sense, Andy, that we enter into marriage in modern America with the assumption that divorce is always an option?
You know, I think most people who enter into marriage want it to work forever. Very few people start a marriage thinking, well, I'll see after 5 years whether this is working. So we want it to work for a lifetime. But I think today most people realize it might not work for a lifetime, which is maybe why many wives go out and get jobs just to protect themselves against in case a marriage fails. But why we are so likely to judge them personally, to say, am I getting enough from this marriage? And if not, should I try another one?
How much of this is grounded in a childishly romantic version, or vision rather, of what marriage is?
You know, we were childishly romantic more, I think, in the 1960s when Frank Sinatra was thinking about love and marriage going together like a baby carriage. That, I think, was the most romantic era. It's almost as though we don't hear as much about love right now. What we hear about is personal growth. It's more individual. It's not so much being swept off my feet by my partner as feeling that I'm really getting a lot of benefits from this marriage. I wonder if we've seen the peak of love and marriage and if love is beginning to recede in its importance.
So Samuel Johnson famously, although he was not American but British, called second marriage the triumph of hope over experience. How likely are those of us who have been married once to remarry after the end of that first relationship?
We're very likely to remarry. And most of us these days will live with a partner before doing it. I would say maybe three-quarters of all divorced people will live with a partner, and many of them will marry that partner. But you know what? Those marriages are even more likely to break up than first marriages. I think that's because people who get divorced have done it once. They're not afraid of it. They don't want to do it again, but they're more likely to resort to it if things aren't going well.
Do those cohabitations, whether after we've been married or before we've ever been married, do they actually keep the rate of divorce from being even higher than it would be?
They do two things. They weed out couples who should never get married, and that will reduce the divorce rate a bit. But they also instill a way of thinking into us. The thinking is very personal. You know, if you're unhappy in a cohabiting, living together relationship, you're supposed to break up. You're not supposed to stay together. And I think what cohabitation does is also puts us in the mindset that we carry into our marriages, which makes us more likely to leave them. So on balance, I'm really not sure it makes things much better.
And outside of the relationship itself, and I think this is really fascinating, you explore this idea that marriage confers a sort of status in this country that being single just cannot match.
I think it's a big status symbol today. I think it's kind of like the merit badge that people want to wear and display. You know, we're the only country that's having such a big fight over gay marriage. And it's because marriage is more important here. It means something. It's a symbol of having a first-class personal life, and everybody is fighting over who gets to display it.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that debate so often is grounded on people will argue the point of legal rights and the ability to inherit and things like that, but you don't think that's necessarily at the heart of the same-sex marriage argument.
If legal rights was all that was at issue in same-sex marriage, then civil unions would be good enough. Nobody would be pressing for a marriage. The reason why civil unions aren't good enough is because marriage is a special status. In fact, the Massachusetts Supreme Court, when it ruled that the same-sex marriage had to be allowed, said, rights aren't good enough. This is a special status, and the Massachusetts Constitution prohibits second-class citizenship. In the U.S., being married is first-class citizenship on a personal basis.
And in fact, in Europe, you found that many same-sex couples, the last thing they want to do is get into this institution that straight people have had a hard enough time with.
Right. In Britain and France, there have been civil union laws that passed without a lot of attention to marriage at all. But a lot of gay and lesbian activists say, hey, wait a minute, why at this late date in history do we want to buy into this oppressive institution? So it's only here that there's been such a fight. Because only here is marriage as important. It's really central to who we think we are as people.
To what extent do social class and education affect the chances for a long-term marriage?
People with a lot of education have a much higher chance of having a long-term marriage. In fact, the divorce rate has actually been going down for college graduates, while it's been going up for everybody else. And I think that's because college graduates are the winners in our new globalized economy. They're the ones who can still get decent jobs. They're marrying each other, they have fewer financial problems, and they're doing well. It's the blue-collar workers who are losing their jobs at factories such as General Motors plants who are having the economic troubles in our new economy, and they aren't marrying as much, and when they are, their marriages are more fragile.
So do you think that's a factor of not wanting to be, and forgive this sounds callous, but not wanting to be saddled with someone who might be a burden on you as you're trying to express your individual self?
Yeah, and I think it's still the case that most people expect that the husband in a marriage should have a steady job. These days, so does the wife, and that's a good thing for most couples. But men have to be steady providers, and if they're not, you're not going to want to be part of their household because they can't take care of you and you might have to take care of them.
What is really remarkable to me is that the United States, as you reported, is among the top three most religious countries in the West, which would suggest that we're being discouraged from divorcing, at least when we are in a church or a mosque or a synagogue, and yet we have the highest divorce rate. How do you explain that?
Well, religion certainly does not endorse divorce, but American religion says to people today, if you get divorced, we'll take care of you. It's okay. We won't blame you. Religion has made its peace with divorce and ministers to divorced individuals. And American religion these days also gets you thinking about yourself. You know, how can I get a better job, have more friends? Those are the kinds of things you hear sermons about in church. So religion doesn't encourage divorce, but says we'll take care of you, and we understand that you're thinking about yourself personally. That's okay with us.
Do you think, particularly among Christians who in today's America are often encouraged to have this very personal relationship with God, does that contribute to that individuality that may make it more difficult to sustain a marriage relationship?
Oh, I think so. I think American religion is very individualistic in that you do have a personal relationship with God. And when you go to church, you hear sermons not about how God will punish you for your sins, but about how if you take God into your life, you might get a better job. You might have a happier marriage. You might do better personally. So American religion is about me and my thoughts about God and about my own personal life. And while those thoughts are not to encourage divorce, all of this gets me thinking in ways that reinforce the kind of individualistic way that people look at our marriages.
We talked already about socioeconomic status. I wonder what impact you think the marriage industry in this country has on getting people convinced that, that a wedding is a great idea.
The marriage industrial complex, as somebody would call it, is a huge industry, that markets very elaborate weddings to everybody. And that industry has grown. Now, you might think that that industry would fade away. I mean, why do you need a big wedding these days? You don't even need to be married these days. What's that all about? I think what it's about is it's all a big party to show friends and family that you've arrived, that you and your partner have decent jobs, that you get along, that you're good for each other. You maybe even have had a child already, and you want to show everybody that you are up to a good marriage. And so what do you do these days? You have a wedding. There are some people that we've talked to who say that they won't go downtown to have a wedding, which means go to the Justice of Peace down at City Hall. Unless they have a big wedding, it's not worth doing. That's what you hear from people.
Andrew J. Cherlin is my guest. He's professor of sociology and public policy at Johns Hopkins University. We're talking about his new book, The Marriage Go-Round, The State of Marriage and the Family in America Today. You are welcome to get on the line now to join us. We'll talk a little bit about the impact this all has on children in a moment. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. I'm just joined here by the senior producer of Think and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know, Jeff Whittington, who's got some information on how you can get a copy of Andy's really, really interesting book, The Marriage Go-Round.
You call 800-456-5372. You can go online to kera.org and you can pledge at the $120 membership level. It's $10 a month when you become a sustaining member of KERA, and we will say thanks with your very own copy of Professor Cherlin's book, The Marriage Go-Round. It's yours. Of course, we're not selling you the book. We're just asking you to support your public radio station. And Chris, there's great news today. We're over halfway there to the overall goal of $600,000 raised. We can end this drive in just a couple of days if you will call 800-456-5372.
I will refrain from singing Bon Jovi at this point. Was it Living on a Prayer? Is that Bon Jovi? We're halfway there. 1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. We get a little loopy at this stage in the fundraising campaign. Want to thank Chandrashekhar Pasari in Coppell, a brand new member. Thank you so much. Ann Taylor in Springtown, Texas, a renewing member. Huang Wen Murphy, from Murphy. That's a first membership contribution. Welcome, Huang. And welcome to all of you who are picking up the phone now to call. Very excited to be able to offer you The Marriage Go-Round among our list of thank you gifts at the $120 level. This is one of my favorite kinds of discussions because it's not only about marriage and wherever you are, whether you're married, single, gay, or straight. It's interesting because it tells you a little bit about the society we live in. And there are so many interesting elements to this. We are proud to have an audience like you who get this so that we can have these great conversations. We know that you would be here regardless. We can only be here thanks to your financial support. 1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number.
You can also join online at kera.org. You know, Chris, you mentioned Bon Jovi instantly. I heard an interview with John Bon Jovi who said his songwriting philosophy is don't bore us, get to the chorus. And if you think of all the Bon Jovi hits, the chorus was the very first thing you heard. Well, don't bore us, get to the phone. Oh, boy. 800-456.
And don't ignore us.
Yeah, don't bore us. Don't ignore us.
Our chorus is 1-800-456-5372. You can also go to kera.org. It's getting bad.
Careful now.
We would love to hear from you right now. It's important to support the station, and you'll be doing a great thing for yourself and for your community. Again, our number is 1-800-456-5372, or you can go online to kera.org to show your support. You can pay with a credit card, debit card, personal check, or set up a very simple sustaining membership. We do appreciate your support. Again, our number, 1-800-456-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Andrew J. Cherlin. He is professor of sociology and public policy at Johns Hopkins. His new book is called The Marriage Go-Round, The State of Marriage and the Family in America Today. We would invite you to join us in our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can also send a question via email to think@kera.org. Andy, it seems to me that people used to talk a lot about staying married for the sake of the kids. And often by the time the kids were grown, they would just stay together anyway because they were so used to each other. You don't hear that nearly as much anymore. Why do you think that's the case?
Because I think everybody now thinks that it's justified to leave a marriage if the adults are unhappy. Surveys show that very few Americans, maybe only about a quarter, say that an unhappily married couple should stay together for the sake of the children. That's certainly a change from, say, a half century ago.
On the other hand, when children are surveyed, they will tell you that it doesn't matter how much their parents hate each other, they want them together.
Well, that's true. You know, there's a limit to that. If a marriage is characterized by violence, drug abuse, severe conflict, we know that it's actually better for the kids if their parents get divorced. But I don't think that's why the typical marriage ends in the U.S. I think it's more likely to end because somebody's bored, you know, unfulfilled. And in that kind of a divorce, I'm not convinced it's in the best interest of the kids' interest of the kids to do it.
Amazingly, you found that children of remarried mothers do not do any better than the children of single mothers.
Right.
Do you think that speaks to the good job that most single parents out there are doing, or is there something inherently stressful about the presence of step-parents in the home?
You know, I think it's difficult for a child not only to see a parent exit the home, but to see somebody else come back in. In other words, I think it's hard for kids to adjust who are used to single-parent life, which may be fine for them, as you just said. And all of a sudden, somebody else comes into the house and takes their mother's attention, tells them that they're going to be in charge of these days. And many kids can have a problem with that. So what I'm finding is that kids have a problem not only when parents leave, but when new parents come in. And if that second marriage doesn't work, they have to adjust to somebody else going out. So I was very surprised about this. When I first started doing research, I thought if divorce was in some sense the problem, remarriage was the solution. But kids don't do any better in a second family than in a single parent.
And are the numbers pretty much the same if the primary parent is the father and he remarries?
We don't know for sure because there's still so few fathers who are the primary parents, but it looks like it's the same. It looks like it's not a gender thing. It's adjusting to somebody else, a new routine, and that can be tough for kids.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Sharmina in Richardson. Hi, Sharmina.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It's a really interesting show. Actually, a friend of mine and I were discussing how the rate of divorce is also increasing so much in the Muslim population. I mean, you would think that Muslims being so conservative wouldn't, you know, would their rate would be a lot lower. But I've noticed it a lot lately, and I don't know if your guests would agree, but I feel like it's because women are a lot more educated now, and they feel more empowered, and they feel more independent. And that if there is a problem, they don't really need to be with somebody?
You know, it's also the case that Muslims have traditionally had a fairly high divorce rate. They've not been like the Catholics, a religion that says divorce can't happen. So if women are being a bit more empowered these days who are Muslims, they can draw on a tradition of divorce, which might be why you see some of it increasing.
What advice would you offer to single parents who want to protect their children and yet still are going to be affected by this American sense that individualism and individual fulfillment is important?
I would say go slow. That's my advice. We don't want relationship police. We want single parents to be free to be in relationships. But I would say don't move somebody into your house or don't move into someone's house unless you're pretty sure that this is going to be a stable relationship, that it's going to last, and that the person you're moving in is good for your kids. So take your time is my advice to single parents. Be cautious about starting a new household.
We have an email here from John in Dallas who says, many marriages fail because one or both parties change, either because of the demands of work, kids, life, whatever. In the past, up to the 70s, relatively little had changed in marriage. The man worked, the woman stayed home. This is no longer the case, and I feel many more marriages fail now than in previous generations because of daily change in the world. Do you agree with that?
I think we're much more caught up in change and what it means than we used to. And we allow ourselves to change after we get married. You know, in the 1950s, once you got married, that was kind of it for adulthood. You stayed in the roles that you had in your first marriage. You didn't expect to change and grow and develop. You were married. You had kids. Today, however, we think the way the email writer thinks, which is we're concerned about the ability to change, and we want to have that, the right to change. And because we think so much about it, if and when we do change, if our partner doesn't change in the same way, well, we feel like we're justified in perhaps ending that partnership.
So why is it that you think that, you know, virtually everyone has a variety of friends, many of whom have been divorced and remarried or lived together and broken up? Why do we as individuals always think that we're different and then enter into these relationships?
Well, it might be Samuel Johnson's remark that you mentioned earlier about the triumph of hope over experience. We know that there's a lot of divorce around, but we tend to think, well, it won't happen to me. We know that people think about their own self-satisfaction, but most people say, well, I don't. I'm different. There's something about being an individual in the U.S. today that makes you optimistic about yourself at the same time as you are pessimistic about others.
And, of course, the first part of that quote is he says that first marriages are a triumph of imagination over intellect.
And maybe some imagination is needed, an imagination that links you to an overarching commitment to somebody that that you can hang on to above and beyond the daily shocks that married life sometimes has.
I know that we almost always have to have these conversations in terms of a good marriage or a healthy marriage as opposed to one that's dysfunctional. But what do we know about the absolute benefits that marriage or lifetime partnership confers over being single?
We know that married people look better in a lot of different areas. We know that their health is much better, for example. We know that they have more satisfaction. But what we don't know is whether marriage causes that or whether healthy and happy people are more likely to stay married. So I can tell you without doubt, people who are married would look better on any survey that you did. What I can't say for sure is, did they marry because they're healthy and happy, or are they happy and healthy because they're married? I'm not sure.
Do you think that people have been just as unhappy in generations before us? They just didn't have the ability to do anything about it?
I think they weren't as unhappy because they didn't think about unhappiness in the same way. Huh. It wasn't on their mind. My grandparents raised 10 children during the Great Depression in the 1930s. And if you would come up to them and said, excuse me, are you getting the personal growth you'd like out of this marriage? They would have said, what are you talking about? It's the Depression. We're raising children. People's expectations about marriage were lower. They didn't expect the kind of emotional high, if you will, that people expect today. And because of that, it was easier to stay together, and it was more stigmatized to break apart.
So let's talk about this encouragement of people staying together. The federal government spends something like $150 million a year to promote healthy marriages. How do those funds get applied?
You could go to a website called twoofus.org, where you'll find some advice about how to keep your relationship together. That's run by an organization that is getting federal funds. There's a private organization in Baltimore that's just like the federal ones that puts posters on the side of buses. When I walk down the street, I see a poster on the side of the bus that says, marriage works with a beaming young couple, or married people make more money with a beaming young couple. We are the only country in the world that does this. We're the only place that's actually promoting marriage because it's so important to us that people be married. Is this worth doing? Is it worth spending $100 million? Well, to the people who are convinced that if we had more marriage, a lot of our problems would be lessened, they think it is. Other people say, is this the best use of our public money, and is this really going to be effective? Can we really somehow mount an advertising campaign that's going to change what people do?
In your opinion, in fact, encouraging marriage for its own sake may be less helpful than promoting family stability. Can you explain the most important differences between those two things?
Sure. I'm all in favor of helping a young couple that just had a kid together or who are about to get married or stay married. Having two biological parents with a kid in a stable relationship offers a great environment for children. What I'm talking about is people who already have a kid, and they've already broken up with the father or mother of that kid. And if they get married, it's going to be to somebody else, not the biological parent. And I'm convinced that those marriages don't particularly help kids, as we talked about, kids in second marriages don't look any better than kids in first marriages. And if that second relationship breaks up, the child has to adapt to yet another loss and maybe to somebody else coming in. So what I'm saying to people who already have kids and who aren't going to be remarrying their first partner is stable environments for kids are good. If you're a single parent, you might do just as well or even better by your kid if you take your time and remain single than if you have a series of live-in relationships. Single parents can do a good job. Supporting stable single-parent lives will actually help some kids.
Would you go so far as to recommend that single parents not date or not bring anybody home while their kids are still living there?
No, I wouldn't at all. I mean, we don't want to police that. We don't want to be moralistic, and that would never be effective. But there's a difference between dating somebody, bringing them home, and moving in with them. I think sometimes we move in too quickly. You know, that's part of what living together, cohabitation, has done for us. It's lowered the bar for living with somebody because you can just move them in. And then you can move them out. And because it's so easy, I think some Americans tend to start those residential living together relationships a bit too soon in their emotional relationship with people. So that's what I'd like to see us slow down on, is moving people in and out, not dating, not having a relationship. That's fine.
Andrew J. Cherlin is my guest. He's professor of sociology and public policy at Johns Hopkins University. We'll be back to our discussion with him in a moment, and you're welcome to join us at 1-800-933-5372 or via email to think@kera.org. We are also, at this moment, in the middle of our spring fundraising campaign. We are halfway to our goal for this campaign. Would love to hear from you this afternoon at 1-800-456-5372. You can also go online and do that at kera.org. I think the average gift the past several years for radio memberships tends to be around $120. If that's the amount that you are prepared to give, we would love to be able to send you, with our compliments, a copy of Andy's book, The Marriage Go-Round. Of course, you can buy this book at any retailer, and we would encourage you to do so if it's something that you want. However, if it's time to renew or time to become a member for the first time, or you want to make an additional gift, it's just something that we have to offer to sort of sweeten the deal a little bit.
800-456-5372 is the telephone number. Online at kera.org. Don't forget, everyone who calls or goes online during the drive, no matter what you give, or really even if you give at all, of course, we encourage you to give, is entered in a drawing to win this British Airways trip to London. It's two round-trip business class tickets from DFW to London, a $1,000 Marriott gift card, and you also get a tour of the BBC studios in London. And that's somebody's going to win that trip as soon as the drive is over. So go ahead and call right now, 800-456-KERA, or pledge online at kera.org. And Chris, I don't know if you remember this Blake Bailey challenge from Tyler.
Yeah, $1,000 he was going to match.
Right, exactly. He's going to match every pledge from the Tyler area up to $1,000. And we started this last Thursday. Well, we're $90 away from meeting this challenge.
We can sew that up.
So someone in Tyler right now, please call 800-456-5372. Pledge $90 so that a great KERA member, Blake Bailey, will come through on his challenge to match up to $1,000, all the contributions for Tyler during this challenge period, which started on Thursday and really has been running until Met. So I just want to remind everybody in Tyler that there's still a chance for your $90 donation to go twice as far if you call right now, 800-456-5372.
I think part of being a sort of a responsible adult community member is realizing that there are things that you know strengthen your community, make it better, and then recognizing that they exist because you take action. Part of the action that you take in supporting KERA, of course, is flipping on the radio and listening every day, and we are delighted to have you. But really, membership and financial support of the station is what makes it possible. If you're someone who has never given a cent and thinks, why would I do that, consider what would happen if everyone else did that. The station wouldn't be able to operate. 56% of the money that it takes to keep the station going comes from listeners. It's not all from big corporations. It's not all from the government. The bulk of it comes from people just like you. And some people give $10 a month and some people give $200 a month. That's entirely your call. But we would ask that you make the call and give us some support and let us know that this matters to you. 1-800-456-5372 is the number.
Yeah, you've been able to listen to KERA. You've been able to use the service because other people have given money voluntarily to the station. And so those people and Chris and I and everybody here working on this membership campaign would really like for you to step up to the plate and make a contribution. You know, Chris, we've raised, thanks to so many thousands of generous listeners, we've raised over $307,000 at this point. That means we're getting close to just about $290,000 left to go, and we know that if you will call right now, if you'll go online to KERA.org or call 800-456-5372 and make your contribution, we know we can wrap this thing up by Thursday or Friday of this week, get right back to the regular schedule, and we won't come back with a membership campaign until the fall. So we promise that that's not going to happen. We promise the drive will end as soon as we raise the last dollar necessary, but that's only going to happen if you call 800-456-KERA.
It just takes a couple of minutes, and if you are thinking that you're not sure what a bite it would take out of your budget to give, you know, $350 or something all at once, remember that we have this thing called the sustaining membership, and that takes just a couple minutes to set up, and the volunteer will take your checking account information, and there's just a monthly draw, like you may do with a lot of your other bills. You can set that amount at anything you want. I think $5 is the minimum amount. But, you know, even if you do $20 or $30 a month, it becomes pretty easy to afford that because you don't feel it all at once. On the other hand, a credit or debit card is great for us because we get to put the money to work right away. The choice, though, is entirely up to you. We just ask that you make the choice to call. That's the most important action that you can take right now. 1-800-456-5372. You can also go online and start your membership at KERA.org.
And you might want to receive the new KERA green t-shirt. This is an organic cotton t-shirt. It's white. It's 100% organic cotton, I should say. And it has the slogan, Great Minds Think Green, printed on it. It's available in the large and extra large size. When you join the station at the $60 membership level, whatever the reason, you know you're going to get great programming. You know you're going to get important and timely news and information from KERA. That alone is reason enough to call 800-456-5372 or pledge online at KERA.org.
We're really proud to be able to support you and to serve you here. And we're also proud to know how many of you make the decision to support KERA with your dollars. To actually, it's one thing to just listen. It's another thing to actually decide to take a stand and take a little chunk out of your wallet and make that contribution. We are so grateful to those of you who have made the decision to do that. Please give us a call at 1-800-456-5372. That's 1-800-456-KERA. Or go ahead and surf over to KERA.org and click on the support button at the top of the page. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Andrew J. Cherlin is my guest. We're discussing his book, The Marriage Go-Round, The State of Marriage and the Family in America Today. You can get a copy of Andy's book at the $120 membership level when you call 1-800-456-5372. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or via email to think@kera.org. That's where we hear from David, who says, Andy, that you mentioned those who are married are considered first-class citizens. How do we make those who are not married or may never get married, such as young adults who can't find love, first-class citizens?
Well, I think our laws make them first-class citizens, but I think in our values, there is still something about getting married that we want. So it may mean broadening our conception of what a good adult life is like. Half a century ago, only marriage. That was the only way to have what people thought was a good adult life. People thought you were mentally ill if you weren't married in the 1950s. Today, marriage is one of many ways to live one's life. It's still the most prestigious one. I doubt we'll change that too much, but maybe we have to be a bit more accepting and tolerant about other styles of life.
Let's go next on the line to Ed in Arlington. Hi, Ed.
Hi. I'm wondering if guests could comment on the history of marriage. I remember taking a course in college that pointed out that the obsession we also have in our society with crime and the tendency to put people away for longer and longer sentences is really not necessary, is that once you get your unmarried males off the streets and into marriages, they tend to settle down and not be criminals anymore once the wife and kids become part of one's life. And I was also in related to that, I wanted to know if you could talk about the involvement of the state in marriage. I remember taking a course in which we learned that the modern marriages began in Western societies in Europe in the Middle Ages, when kingdoms began sanctioning marriages again primarily for the crime reason that much of the crime was caused by unmarried males causing mayhem in the towns and villages, and that same observation was noted that once the state.
Yeah, I think we've got it. Kind of wives as jail diversion. Does that figure in, Andy?
Well, you know, we lock up more people than any other country in the world, and itself is causing big problems for families, because in a lot of neighborhoods, it's hard to find a man who's not in prison and has a steady job. Does marriage prevent crime? Maybe, but it's probably also the case that people who are more social, less likely to create crimes, are the ones who gravitate toward marrying. I guess I have to say I'm not convinced that if everybody was married, we'd have no crime. I expect that some people aren't married for a good reason, which is nobody wants to live with them because, in fact, they're a bit antisocial. So I think it's a bit more complex. Marriage may help our crime rate, but people who are less likely to be criminals are more attractive as marriage partners.
Is the status conferred by marriage still greater for women than it is for men?
I don't think so anymore. Used to be the case that women's lives, adult lives, were defined by marriage. You know, they were called by their husband's names. My wife would be Mrs. Andrew J. Cherlin. We don't do that anymore. We allow women to have a larger identity, and so marriage isn't the whole ball game for them. At the same time, it's still important for men, at least as a symbol of having a good personal life. So I would say that both women and men now want to be married. They don't need to be married. They can get along without being married, but they want to have that status symbol, if you will, of being married.
Let's go next to Michael in Dallas. Hi, Michael.
Hello. Just wanted to make a quick comment that years ago, the head of the Episcopal Diocese in New Jersey, Bishop Spong, had been a strong advocate of betrothment rather than marriage right off the bat, to give young people a chance to exactly find out if they were compatible, and then, if so, have a formal marriage ceremony several years into their relationship. And I'd just like to hear your guest comment on the idea of betrothment and how it might lessen the trauma of a divorce and maybe really, you know, stop a lot of divorces and family trauma. Thanks.
Well, you know, we have something that's kind of like betrothment. It's called living together, cohabitation. A lot of couples live together for a few years to try to see if they are compatible. But you know what? People who live together have even higher divorce rates than people who don't. I think it's because they carry an ethic with them that a relationship is breakable if it has some problems. But, of course, our caller is talking about something that's supervised by the church. That's very different from your basic living together relationships. And there's some evidence that people, whether they're living with a partner before marriage or not, do better if they do some kind of premarital counseling, often from a church, that it can help them recognize issues that, if left untouched, could harm their marriages.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll speak next with Jeff in Dallas. Hello, Jeff.
Hi there. My wife and I are in our mid-40s, and we are raising our grandson. He is our adopted child, and our daughter kind of went off the rails for a while, and that's when we did the adoption. She's kind of stabilized, you know, she's a young lady who's held a steady job for a while now. But there's a bit of a complication in as much as, you know, we're raising him. He's now kind of getting to the age where he understands a little more about what's going on, although I don't think he's fully, you know, cognizant of the situation. And I just wondered if the guest had any comments about that situation, what works, what doesn't work, and what we can do to improve our odds of you know, his long-term well-being.
Well, first, you should know that there are more and more families like yours. The percentage of kids living with grandparents who are raising them, just as you described, has been going up. Now, you might think that might go down in our wealthy society, but that's not the case. As some parents in the middle generation have had problems, more and more grandparents are stepping in, as you've done. So first of all, he's not alone, and he'll probably find some other kids in a similar situation to him. Secondly, I would say you do best by being the excellent grandfather you are. You don't try to be a parent. You try to be a grandparent, but a very close one. And my guess is that kids will respond very positively to a grandparent, especially as they see this being more common today.
Let's go next to Diane in Grapevine. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I have an observation that I was wondering if you've made as well. I was wondering what you think about the idea that in this culture that seems to be so focused on instant gratification, how much that has contributed to divorce, you know, in as much as people kind of say, oh, well, this isn't really exactly what I want, and over here there's something that looks a lot better, so I'll just go take that. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of pervasive in the culture.
Sure is. I mean, I think that's at the core of why a lot of people get divorced, a sense that something could be better, you know, that this is good, but there should be more in life. That's the kind of sentiment that didn't lead to anything a few generations ago. Probably we didn't even think about a few generations ago. But in general, we're more into our own personal choice these days. We have choice after choice after choice. And it's supposed to make us happier to make all these choices about what kind of job we'll have, who we'll marry, whether we should marry somebody else. But choices cause anxiety themselves. I mean, it's hard to constantly ask yourself, am I okay? Am I okay? Am I happy? So there's a gain in all the choices we have. We can find somebody who's better for us. But there's also the potential negatives of having to make a lot of choices, constantly monitoring ourselves and making changes that might not work out for the best. But that's certainly a very large part of what's going on today.
Do we need to learn to sort of rebalance the role that happiness ought to play in evaluating how well off we are within any relationship?
Yeah, I think we may be too into a very personal view of happiness. You know, you can be happy being a parent or happy being a spouse. Today, happiness is about our own feelings, ourselves. It comes from within us. And maybe we need not to give up happiness, but to define it a bit more broadly as being a good parent, a good worker, a good partner, as well as just being true to ourselves. It's that broader type of happiness that can be consistent with a stable life for your kids.
Andrew J. Cherlin is professor of sociology and public policy at Johns Hopkins University. His new book is called The Marriage Go-Round, The State of Marriage and the Family in America Today. Andy, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you to all of you who are listening and those of you who are supporting KERA financially this afternoon. The way to do that, of course, is by picking up the phone and calling 1-800-456-5372 or going online to kera.org. However you choose to do it, it's about a two-minute transaction. You'll feel great, not just today, but for the rest of the year when you tune to the station and hear your money at work. You know, we all make lots of choices about not-for-profits that we may want to give money to. In this case, this is a service that you're already consuming. This is not only doing things for other people. This is doing something. This is an organization that does something for you every single day. And we think that that's worth a contribution of whatever you decide is appropriate. 1-800-456-5372 is the number. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And you know what, something you're saying about the not-for-profits that you support, you know, in the arts and an entertainment community, there are lots of choices. We can't sell you a season ticket to KERA like a performance organization can.
You've already got one.
Well, yeah, exactly. We don't have admission charges to get in and hear the programming like a museum might. And you know, we do bring you interesting, enriching, entertaining, maybe even life-changing programming that you hear on KERA, and definitely news and information in a way that isn't presented elsewhere that you use and you enjoy and you appreciate. You're already using the service. No tickets required. We're asking you to step up voluntarily and take responsibility for the fact that you use the service and call 800-456-5372 or pledge online at kera.org.
We have some great news. Our Tyler Challenge has been met. Thank you so much to Blake Bailey, who offered $1,000 worth of matches for contributions that came in from the great city of Tyler. And it turns out that we have had $1,000 in contributions from Tyler. So we have received from Blake that additional $1,000 that will go to programming here at KERA 90.1. Really appreciate all those of you who made it possible, including Mr. Alpesh Jethva from Tyler, who is a new member. Thank you so much. And I think he's the guy who put it over the edge.
Yeah, thanks very much, Alpesh. Thanks also to Blake Bailey for making the challenge. It's really great to hear support from Tyler. It's really great to hear support from Sherman and Wichita Falls. You recognize those cities from our longer legal ID that lists the translators, the transmitters that we have in those communities. And, you know, it's really great to be able to bring you the KERA programming that you use, that you need, news and information right here in North Texas. We're having you to we're asking you to support it during this membership campaign. The sooner you call, the sooner you follow the lead of Chris Moore in Dallas, of Anna Gray Labas in Frisco, and Christopher Andrews in Roanoke, the sooner you do what they've done at KERA.org or on the phone at 800-456-5372, the sooner this drive will be over.
It is simple to become a member. You just pick up the phone and call 1-800-456-5372, or you go online to KERA.org. Perhaps we should do that longer legal ID now. You are listening to KERA 90.1, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, and online at KERA.org. We are also K261 CW 100.1 in Tyler, K202 DR 88.3 in Wichita Falls, and K257 EV 99.3 in Sherman.
Wherever you listen, you're getting North Texas, you're getting regional, you're getting national, you're getting international news and information in the style of public radio, a style that you have come to appreciate, something that when you first found it, you said, what is that? That sounds, I mean, I remember when I first tuned to public radio, Chris, and I said, what is this? This is really different. This is not just the regular talk radio stuff.
The rapid fire, 12-second soundbite, argumentative stuff.
And it's been yours, and it's been here for you free of charge for 35 years right here on KERA. We're asking you to join really great listener supporters like Heather Joy in Allen, Rebecca Bailey in Dallas, Elaine Byrne in Fort Worth. Elaine made an additional gift. Thank you so much, Elaine. Thanks to everyone who's called or pledged online. It's really crucial that we hear from you today. We want to wrap this drive up as soon as possible. And with your call and your online pledge, do both, call and pledge online, we can actually finish this drive.
Pledge early, pledge often.
in the next few days. So please do it right now.
1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. You can also go to KERA.org online. Think about the rhythm of your day. Maybe you get up and you listen to Morning Edition, and then you go right on through and listen to Diane Rehm and Terry Gross, and then you listen to this show, and then in the afternoons you listen to Tell Me More and The World and All Things Considered. If public radio is something that you don't that you don't really know how to organize your day without, if public radio is the place you turn to get substantive information about the headline, little snippets that you may have heard elsewhere, it's worth supporting. Information, this is an information society. Information is something that we know is valuable and that is worth paying for. 1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number. We do have lots of great ways to say thank you. If you're interested in getting a copy of Andrew Cherlin's book, The Marriage Go-Round, we have that available as a gift at the $120 contribution level or above. You may be interested in the good old Think coffee mug. Those are those black mugs with the Think logo in white with a little blue dot over the eye. Those are still around at the $60 membership level. If you're like my parents, you'll get a whole set of them. You know, they're a terrific thing to have. We know that you're not joining the station so that you can get these thank you gifts. They're all not worth as much, you know, retail value as your contribution. That's because we take the bulk of the money from your contribution. We spend a little of it on a thank you gift, and the most of it, the rest of it, goes back right into the programming that you value.
1-800-456-5372 is the number to call. Pledge online at KERA.org. Yeah, that Think coffee mug is the same mug you see on the TV version of the show. On Friday nights and on Sunday mornings on KERA Channel 13. And we're really, it's not the same one. It's
yours
not the exact
be,
same one.
Yours will be clean and unused and specially glazed. The ones we use on TV are matte so that they won't be too shiny. You'll have a special, beautiful, glossy one.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's really cool to be able to share that with you if you're so inclined. Of course, you can make your entire contribution go directly to programming. when you call 800-456-5372 or when you pledge online at kera.org. It really is simple. You get to decide what it's worth to you. Maybe $90, maybe $120, maybe $240 is the right level for you. That's just $20 a month when you join as a sustaining member. And I'll tell you what, it would really help right now because we're over halfway to the end of the drive. Your call, your online pledge will get us that much further, and we'll wrap this thing up in the next couple of days.
You can feel great about what you've done when you decide to become a member of KERA or renew a membership at 1-800-456-5372. If you're already a member in good standing, maybe put something up on your Facebook page or on Twitter or on MySpace and let your friends know that this is something you've done and inspire them to also support the radio station that they really enjoy and listen to. Again, our number is 1-800-456-5372. Thanks.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.